Chapter 17. A Troublesome Day. Friday morning, on the day after the accursed séance, the Variety's entire staff, the bookkeeper, Vasily Stepanovich Lastochkin, two clerks, three typists, and both cashiers, as well as messengers, ushers, and cleaning ladies, in other words, all those present, were shirking their respective posts and duties. Instead, everyone was sitting on the windowsills facing Sedovaya and gazing at what transpired below by the wall of the Variety. A queue, numbering many thousands, stretched along this wall, two rows strong, its tail far away on Kudrinskaya Square. Some 20 scalpers, well known in Moscow's theatrical circles, stood at its head. The line carried on excitedly, attracting the attention of pedestrians streaming past, as it busily discussed the tantalizing tales of yesterday's incredible séance of black magic. The tales greatly flustered the bookkeeper, Vasily Stepanovich, who was not present at yesterday's show. The ushers told of God knows what. For instance, that following the famous séance, some ladies were running about in the streets indecently dressed, and so on like that. The modest and quiet Vasily Stepanovich could only flap his eyelids as he took in the yarns about all these wonders. He had no idea what action to take, and at the same time, action absolutely had to be taken, and by none other than him, for he was the highest-ranking official in the Variety's entire remaining crew. By 10 o'clock, the line of hopefuls swelled to such proportions that the police got wind of it. Both regular and mounted detachments were deployed with astounding swiftness, bringing some semblance of order to the line. Even organized, however, the mile-long serpent looked very tempting and drove the folk on Sedovaya to utter astonishment. This was outside. Inside the Variety, things were also far from perfect. From the crack of dawn, telephones began ringing in Likhodiev's office, Rimsky's office, the bookkeeping department, the box office, and Varyonika's office. At first, Vasily Stepanovich tried to answer the calls. The cashier would also pick up the phone. The ushers would mutter something into the receivers, but finally they gave up altogether. After all, there was absolutely nothing to say to demands for the whereabouts of Likhodiev, Varyonika, and Rimsky. At first they tried the excuse, Likhodiev's at home, but the callers would inevitably reply that they had already phoned the apartment and were told that Likhodiev was at the Variety. A distressed lady called, asking for Rimsky, and they suggested she call his wife. Crying, the receiver proclaimed that she was the wife and that Rimsky was nowhere to be found. Things were becoming absurd. The cleaning lady had already told everyone that when she came to Rimsky's office to tidy up, she saw the door wide open, the lights on, the garden window broken, the chair lying on the floor, and not a soul in the office. Soon after 10 o'clock, Madame Rimsky burst into the Variety, weeping and wringing her hands. The dazed Vasily Stepanovich had no way of helping her, and at 10:30, the police arrived. Their first and completely logical question was, "What's going on here, folks? What's the matter?" The crew stepped back, leaving behind a pale and tense Vasily Stepanovich. There was little choice but to call things by their proper names and admit that the Variety's administration, in the persons of the director, the finance director, and the manager, had vanished to places unknown. That following yesterday's séance, the MC had to be taken to a mental institution. Finally, that the aforementioned séance was, to put it concisely, nothing short of scandalous. The weeping Madame Rimsky was pacified to the extent that it was possible and sent home by the police, who took a far greater interest in the cleaning lady's description of the finance director's office. The staff were asked to return to their posts and get busy, and in a short while, detectives appeared in the building, accompanied by a sharp-eared, muscular, ash-coloured dog with extremely intelligent eyes. The buzz spread instantly among the staff that the hound was none other than the famous Ace of Diamonds. And indeed, it was he. His behaviour astounded all. As soon as Ace of Diamonds ran into the finance director's office, he growled, baring his monstrous yellow fangs, then dropped onto his belly and crawled towards the broken window with a mixture of anguish and rage in his eyes. Conquering his fear, he leapt up suddenly on the windowsill, threw back his sharp muzzle, and let out a savage and vicious howl. Growling and shaking, he refused to leave the window and even made to jump out. The dog was removed from the office and released in the vestibule, where he left via the front door and led those following him to a taxi stand. Here, he lost the trail. After that, Ace of Diamonds was taken away. The investigation headquartered itself in Varyonika's office, where all of Variety staff members who had witnessed the events of yesterday's séance were summoned, one by one. It should be noted that at every step, the detectives were accosted by unforeseen difficulties. The thread kept tearing in their hands. Were there posters? Yes. But during the night, they had been plastered over with new ones, and now, so strike me dead, there wasn't a single one left. Where did this magician come from, anyway? Who knew? So then, there must have been a contract. One would think so, said the agitated Vasily Stepanovich. And if there had been a contract, it must have passed through the bookkeeping department. Indubitably, Vasily Stepanovich replied worriedly. So where is it? Not here, the bookkeeper said, spreading his arms and growing progressively more pale. And indeed, not a trace of the contract could be found. Not in the bookkeeping office, not in the finance director's, not in Lichoriev's, not in Varyonika's. So what was the magician's name? Vasily Stepanovich had no idea, as he was not at last night's séance. The ushers did not know. The cashier frowned and frowned, thought and thought, and finally said, Volant, I think. Or perhaps it was not Volant, perhaps not, perhaps it was Falland. It was quickly determined that the Travellers Bureau had heard absolutely nothing of any magicians, be they Volants or Falants. The messenger Karpov reported that the magician was apparently staying at Lichodiev's apartment. The apartment was immediately inspected. No magicians were found. Lichodiev himself was missing as well. Grunia, the maid, was missing, and no one knew where she had gone. The chairman of the Tenants' Association, Nikonor Ivanovich, was missing. Proliezhnev was missing. The situation was utterly ridiculous. The entire upper administration had vanished, and a strange and scandalous séance had taken place yesterday, but no one knew who had produced or instigated it. In the meantime, noon approached, and the box office was due to open. But of course, this was entirely out of the question. A giant piece of cardboard was immediately hung on the doors of the Variety, bearing the words, "Today's performance is cancelled." Unrest spread through the queue from the head down, but nonetheless it began to break up, and an hour later there was not a trace of it left. The detectives left to continue their work elsewhere. The staff was dismissed with the exception of the watchman, and the doors of the Variety were locked. Two urgent tasks now lay before Vasily Stepanovich, the bookkeeper. The first was to go to the Commission on Shows and Lighter Entertainment and report on yesterday's events. The second was to drop by the entertainment financial sector in order to turn in yesterday's earnings. 21,711 rubles. The careful and responsible Vasily Stepanovich wrapped the money in a newspaper, tied it up with string, and placed the package in his briefcase. Knowing the procedure well, he headed for the taxi stand instead of the bus or tram stop. As soon as the drivers of the three available cars saw the passenger hurrying towards their lot carrying a fat briefcase, all three drove away empty right under his nose, eyeing him angrily for some reason. Stunned by this circumstance, the bookkeeper stood transfixed for quite some time, trying to figure out what it could mean. An empty cab came by a few minutes later, and the driver grimaced as soon as he saw the passenger. "Are you free?" Vasily Stepanovich asked with a surprised cough. "Show me the money," the driver replied angrily, without looking at the passenger. Increasingly amazed, the bookkeeper stuck the precious briefcase under his arm, pulled a 10 out of his wallet, and showed it to the driver.
"No way," the latter tersely said.
"I beg your pardon," the bookkeeper began, but the driver interrupted him.
"Got any threes?"
Utterly confused, the bookkeeper pulled out 2 threes and showed them to the driver.
"Get in," the man shouted, and punched the flag of his meter so hard he almost broke it. "Let's go."
"No change, is that it?"
the bookkeeper asked sheepishly.
"A pocket chock full of change,"
the driver bawled, and his bloodshot eyes appeared in the rearview mirror.
"Third time today, same thing with the other cars. Some son of a bitch gives me a 10, I give him change, 4.50, so he gets out, the bastard. 5 minutes later, I look, instead of a 10, it's a label from a seltzer bottle."
Here, the driver uttered several unprintable words.
"Another, near Zubovskaya, a 10, I give him 3 rubles, gets out. I go for my wallet, and there's a bee in there. Zap, stings me right in the finger. Oh, you..."
And again, the driver squeezed in a few unprintable words.
"No 10. Yesterday at the Variety..."
Unprintable words.
"Some scum of a magician performed a seance with 10-ruble bills.
Unprintable words. The stupefied bookkeeper shivered and pretended he had never heard the word variety before in his life, all the while thinking, "Oh, boy." Upon arriving at his destination and paying the driver without incident, the bookkeeper entered the building and headed down the hall to the director's office. Even before he got there, he realised that he had come at a bad time. The offices of the Entertainment Commission were in turmoil. A messenger girl ran past the bookkeeper, her scarf sliding off her head and her eyes bulging.
"Nothing, nothing, nothing, my dears," she cried at no one in particular. "The jacket and the pants are there, but there's nothing inside."
She vanished in a doorway, and the sound of breaking dishes came immediately from within. A familiar manager of the Commission's first sector ran out of the secretary's office and vanished without a trace, evidently in such a state that he did not recognise the bookkeeper. Shaken, the bookkeeper reached the secretary's office, which served as the anteroom of the Commission chairman's office, and his astonishment reached its limit. A menacing voice came from behind the closed door, undoubtedly belonging to Prokhor Petrovich, the chairman of the commission.
"Bawling someone out, is he?"
thought the confused bookkeeper, and glancing round, saw something else entirely. In a leather armchair lay Prokhor Petrovich's personal secretary, the beautiful Anna Richardovna. Holding a wet handkerchief in her hand, she was weeping uncontrollably, with her head thrown back and her legs stretched out almost to the middle of the room. Anna Richardovna's entire chin was smeared in lipstick, and black streams of wet mascara ran down her peach-like cheeks from her eyelashes. Seeing someone come in, Anna Richardovna jumped up, dashed to the bookkeeper, and clutching at the lapels of his jacket, began to shake him and scream.
"Thank God! At last someone brave enough! Everyone else left! Everyone deserted! Let's go! Let's go to him! I don't know what to do!"
And still weeping, she dragged the bookkeeper into the main office. The first thing the bookkeeper did in the office was drop his briefcase. Even as every thought in his head turned upside down, and, one must say, with good reason. Behind a giant desk with a massive inkwell sat an empty suit, moving a dry, inkless pen across a piece of paper. The suit possessed a tie, and a fountain pen was sticking out of the jacket pocket, but neither neck nor head was present above the collar, just as no hands peeped out of the sleeves. The suit was immersed in its work, completely ignoring the chaos that reigned all around. Hearing someone enter, the suit sat back in its chair, and Prokhor Petrovich's familiar voice rang out from above the collar.
"What is it? The sign on the door clearly says I am not available."
The beautiful secretary shrieked, wrung her hands, and exclaimed,
"You see? You see? He's not here! Not here! Bring him back! Bring him back!"
Someone peeped into the office, gasped, and flew back out. The bookkeeper felt his legs begin to shake and sat down on the corner of a chair, remembering, however, to pick up his briefcase. Clawing at the bookkeeper's jacket, Anna Richardovna bounced around him and screamed.
I always, always tried to stop him when he cursed. Now he's cursed himself straight to hell.
The beauty ran up to the desk and exclaimed in a tender, melodic voice, a little nasal from all the crying,
Prosha, where are you?
Who are you to call me Prosha? The suit inquired disdainfully, sitting even further back in its chair.
He doesn't recognize me. Me, you see?
Wailed the secretary.
I'll thank you not to wail in my office, said the irritable striped suit, growing angry, and caught a fresh batch of documents with its sleeve, clearly intending to append instructions to every single one.
No, I can't bear to look at it, I just can't,
Anna Richardovna cried, and ran back to the secretary's office, the bookkeeper racing behind her like a speeding bullet.
Imagine, I'm sitting here, Anna Richardovna narrated, quivering in agitation, and again latching on to the bookkeeper's sleeve. And then a cat walks in. Black, huge, a behemoth of a cat. I naturally yell, shoo. The cat leaves, and this fat man walks in instead, also with a cat-like face, and says, Why are you shooing at the visitors, ma'am? And zoom, straight to Prokhor Petrovich. I run after him, of course, and yell, Are you crazy? And the insolent bastard goes straight to Prokhor Petrovich and sits down in a chair opposite him. Now he is the sweetest man, but edgy. He just explodes. No argument there. Nervous man, works like an ox. He explodes. How dare you barge in here unannounced? And that insolent bastard, just imagine, slouches in the chair and says with a smile, Well, I'm just here to talk about a little business with you. Prokhor Petrovich explodes again. I'm busy. And the other one, just think of it, says, No, you're not. How do you like that? So, Prokhor Petrovich loses all his patience and screams, What the hell is this? Get him out of here, devil take me. And the other one, just imagine, smiles and says, Devil take you? That can be arranged. And boom. I didn't even have time to scream. The cat-faced guy is gone, and the suit is just sitting there.
Anna Richardovna howled, stretching open her now completely shapeless mouth. Choking on her sobs, she caught her breath and started to ramble incoherently.
And it writes, it writes, it writes. It's madness. It talks on the phone. A suit. Everyone ran away faster than rabbits.
The bookkeeper could only stand there and shake. But fate suddenly came to his rescue. The police, numbering two people, entered the office in a calm, businesslike manner. Seeing them, the beauty began to weep even harder and jabbed her finger at the main office door. Let's not cry, ma'am, the first man said calmly, while the bookkeeper, judging his continued presence to be most unnecessary, jumped out of the secretary's room and was back outdoors a minute later. A wind hummed in his head, as in a chimney, and fragments of the usher's tales about yesterday's cat and his part in the séance filtered through the humming.
Hey, hey, could this be our little kitty?
Unable to get anywhere at the commission, the dutiful Vasily Stepanovich decided to visit its branch office, located on Vagankovsky Lane. And so as to calm himself a little, he made the journey there on foot. The Entertainment Commission's branch was situated in an old peeling mansion set back from the street, famous for the porphyry columns in its front hall. It was not the columns that awed visitors to the branch that day, however, but that which happened between them. Several visitors stood dumbfounded and stared at a girl sitting at a table covered with special entertainment-related literature that she had been selling. At the moment, the girl was not offering any literature to anyone and waved away concerned questions. All the while, At least 20 telephones were bursting with frenzied ringing from above, from below, from all around, in every department of the branch. Taking a break from her weeping, the girl suddenly gave a start and cried hysterically.
"Here it goes again!"
And unexpectedly began singing in a shaky soprano. "Glorious seascape, the sacred Baikal." A courier appeared on the stairs, shook his fist at someone, and joined the girl with his weak, faded baritone. "Glorious ship, an old salmon barrel." The courier's voice was joined by other faraway voices. The chorus grew, and finally, the song roared in every corner of the building. In the nearby room, number 6, the location of the accounting office, someone's powerful hoarse bass particularly stood out. The chorus was accompanied by the growing rattle of telephones. "Hey, Barguzin, make the mighty waves roll," screamed the courier from the stairs. Tears rolled down the girl's face as she tried to clench her teeth, but her mouth opened by a will of its own, and she sang an octave above the courier. "This lad hasn't far to travel." The silent visitors were most astonished by the fact that the singers scattered in various parts of the building nonetheless managed to sing very harmoniously, as if the entire chorus was standing at attention in front of an invisible conductor. Pedestrians on Vagankovsky Lane paused by the mansion's fence, wondering at the merriment that reigned inside the branch office. As soon as the first verse came to an end, the singing stopped suddenly, again as if by a conductor's motion. The courier swore quietly and disappeared. Then the front door opened, revealing a man whose white coat protruded from underneath his summer jacket, and with him a policeman.
"Do something, Doctor, I beg you!"
the girl cried hysterically. The branch secretary ran out to the staircase and, evidently burning up with shame and embarrassment, stuttered,
"You see, Doctor, we have a case of some sort of mass hypnosis here. Thus, it is imperative that..."
Choking on his words, he did not finish his sentence, and instead burst out in a tenor,
"Shilka Nerchinsk! Dance!"
The girl had time to scream, but failed to explain who it was she was scolding. Instead, she forced out a roulade and also began singing about Shilka and Nerchinsk.
"Get a hold of yourself, stop singing," the doctor said to the secretary.
The secretary showed every indication that he would give anything to stop singing, except that he could not. And together with the chorus, he informed the pedestrians outside that he was untouched in the woods by the ravenous beast, unscathed by the soldier's bullet. The moment the verse ended, the girl was the first to receive a dose of valerian from the doctor, who then ran after the secretary to administer it to everyone else.
"Excuse me, miss," Vasily Stepanovich addressed the girl suddenly. "Have you had a black cat come in here a while back?"
"Cat? What cat?"
the girl yelled angrily.
"We've got an ass in charge here, an ass! Let him hear! I'm telling everything,"
she added, and indeed went on to relate what happened. It turned out that the manager of the branch office, having completely ruined the lighter entertainment programme, according to the girl, suffered from a manic habit of forming various clubs for the employees.
"Blowing smoke in his superior's eyes!" the girl screamed.
Over the course of the year, the manager had already organised a club dedicated to the study of Lermontov's poetry, as well as a chess and checkers, a ping-pong, and a horseback riding club. By summertime, he threatened a freshwater rowing club and a rock climbing club. And then today, during lunch break, the manager walked in.
"And he's got this son of a bitch on his arm,"
the girl narrated.
"No one knows where he came from, checked pants, cracked pince nez, and with this absolutely impossible filthy face."
According to the girl, the manager immediately introduced him to everyone in the lunchroom as a known specialist in the field of organising choruses. The faces of the budding rock climbers darkened, but the manager immediately called for a positive attitude, whereas the specialist joked and poked and swore that singing takes up the teeniest bit of time while providing, incidentally, a whole damn truckload of benefits.
Naturally, the girl informed, the first to jump in and join were Fanov and Kasarchuk, two well-known office toadies. Realising that the chorus could not be avoided, the other employees had to sign up as well. It was decided to sing at lunchtime, since all the remaining time was already being taken up by Lermontov and Chekhov. To set an example, the manager announced that he had a fine tenor. And then it all went on like a bad dream. The checkered choirmaster specialist bellowed. Do mi sol do! He dragged out the timid from behind the cabinets, where they had sought to escape the singing, declared that Kasarchuk had perfect pitch, and began to whine, snivel, tap the tuning fork on his palm, ask for some compassion for an old choirmaster singer, and beg them to strike up Grand Old Seascape. So they struck it up, and struck it up gloriously. The checkered fellow clearly knew his business. They finished the first verse. Here the choirmaster excused himself, said, "Just be a minute," and vanished. At first they thought he really would return in a minute. Then 10 minutes passed, and he was still gone. Joy spread among the employees. The choirmaster had bolted. And suddenly they began the second verse all by themselves, led by Kasarchuk, who, although he may not have had perfect pitch, did have a rather pleasant-sounding high tenor. They finished singing. No choirmaster. They went back to their places, but had not even had time to sit down, when, against their will, they started singing again. Stop? Not a chance. A few minutes of silence, and they would strike up again. Silence. Strike up! Then they realised they were in trouble. The disgraced manager locked himself in his office. Here, the girl's story was interrupted. The Valerian did not do a thing. A quarter of an hour later, three trucks approached the mansion's fence on Vagankovsky and were boarded by the entire staff led by the manager. As soon as the first truck rocked in the gateway and drove out into the lane, the employees, who were standing in the back and holding each other's shoulders, opened their mouths. The lane was filled with a popular song. The second truck joined the first, and then so did the third. And off they went. Unsurprised pedestrians, hurrying about their business, barely looked up at the trucks, assuming that a group tour was heading out to the country. The trucks were indeed headed out to the country, but the tour would end at Professor Stravinsky's clinic. Half an hour later, the utterly bewildered bookkeeper reached the entertainment financial sector, hoping to finally get rid of the cash. Taught by bitter experience, he first peeped cautiously into the oblong hall, where the clerks were sitting behind matted glass barriers with gold lettering. The bookkeeper could not detect any sign of alarm or disruption. The place was quiet, as any respectable establishment should be. Vasily Stepanovich stuck his head in the window labelled Cash Deposits, greeted the unknown clerk, and asked politely for a deposit slip. "What for?" the clerk in the window asked. The bookkeeper was astonished. "I wish to make a deposit. I'm from the Variety." "One moment," the clerk replied, and immediately lowered a mesh over the opening in the glass. "How odd," the bookkeeper thought. His surprise was quite justified. It was the first time in his life that he had encountered such circumstances. Everyone knows how difficult it is to obtain money. The process is always fraught with obstacles. But the bookkeeper could not recall a single case in his entire 30-year career when someone, be it an official or private person, had difficulty accepting money. But finally, the mesh opened, and the bookkeeper leaned closer to the window. "How much do you have?" the clerk asked. 21,711 rubles. "Whoa," the clerk said ironically for some reason, and handed the bookkeeper a green slip. Knowing the form well, the bookkeeper filled it out in an instant and began to untie the string binding his package. As soon as he opened his bundle, his vision blurred, and he moaned painfully. Foreign money of all sorts flashed before his eyes. Here lay stacks of Canadian dollars, English pounds, Dutch guldens, Latvian larts, Estonian kroonies. "Here he is, one of those jokers from the Variety.
A menacing voice boomed above the dumbstruck bookkeeper, and Vasily Stepanovich was arrested on the spot.